Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? I'm back. Since I last talked to you guys, I have played 16 matches of Modern using Superior Burning Cocoa. 16 games. No, it's more than 16
hot.
Games. 16 matches, guys. I actually went for it this week. I played a lot of Modern. I had a great time, and it was a great PPTQ weekend. But we're back, and we're here to talk to you guys about all the things.
Guess who's back? Back again.
Oh, you're going, you're singing Eminem
Superior
now.
Superior Burning Cocoa's back.
Oh, man.
It's got spaghetti on its shirt.
Yeah, right? I like that. That was good.
See what I did there? There were layers of memes.
And I thought that was pretty clever.
Late 90s rap music.
Speaking of which, have you seen the trailer for that movie Patty Cakes?
No.
It's like, I think it looks to be like a girl who's like high school age, maybe college aged. She's got like the mom in the wheelchair who's got like the... smoking assisted, you know, the tube to help her.
Yeah, back. Sure.
Right. And she's got like two friends, one who looks to be like maybe like a Pakistani guy. I like just watched the trailer. Obviously, like, I don't know. I'm just like judging by what I saw. And like a guy with like a bunch of piercings and dreads. And it's like a very like eclectic group.
It's like a Juno.
And she's like a rapper.
Oh, no.
And she's going to be it's straight up just like it kind of looks like updated. Kind of quirky 8 Mile.
Okay.
Look up the trailer, guys. I'm going to stick Patty Cakes. It looks kind of charming. It won, like, awards at Sundance, I think.
Okay.
But I, like, watched it, and I was like, they realize they're, like, either making a lot of fun of 8 Mile, or this is just remaking 8 Mile with a female lead.
I feel like there are so many sports movies out there that all have that generic plot that there is space to have multiple rap movies.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Especially since there's also at least 5 different Step Up movies, which, by the way, if you haven't heard, are American treasures.
Step Up?
The Step Up franchise.
Oh, yeah.
It's equal parts awful and some of the cruelest it's dance scenes ever.
Oh, yeah.
And so together... greatest. All right, that was a detour we don't need to go down.
Yeah.
Go watch the Step Up movies. They're great. today we're going to be talking about, so you took this deck to the tournament. We're going to talk about the Pro Tour.
Yep.
It was a standard Pro Tour, which is no longer the only kind of Pro Tour. So we'll briefly touch on it and some of the exciting things and some of the things that meant. There was one other thing. Oh, we're going to talk a little bit about one of the favorite cards from your deck. Break down a little bit why we think it might be underrated.
Yep.
And... that's it. That's what we're talking about today. So
I think we can tease what that card is because people like that card.
Fauna Shaman. It's the best.
We went up to 3 Fauna Shaman for this weekend, and I was impressed with it. So
while Ben was at a tournament, I upgraded all my pop culture slang lingo.
He's just been like, reading a dictionary, the urban
reading Urban Dictionary.
So I'm doing that thing right now, guys, where I feel like I have to sneeze. And
so I'm going to break down. We're going to talk about Fauna Shaman, but then you should follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kess Wiley. Ben is Sneezy McSneezer. No, he's at Ben Bateman Media. We also have a Facebook group, and there's cool stuff. And this first month was just getting started, but we learned that analytics stuff exists, and we have a top 10 people that interact on there. So I think what we're going to do is probably start giving passes or prizes of some variety to a random person in the top 10. People that interact on the Facebook page, so make sure to check that out. It's the official Masters of Modern Facebook group. If you want to donate to the Patreon, that's the other main thing. We do this podcast every week, and we keep getting it out every week as much as it might kill us, and we love doing it. We love you guys, and we love the support. And if you just go there to donate $1, $5, whatever you can afford, it's super appreciated. It's how we kind of keep this podcast going on. Lastly, make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. I'm going to be guesting on it in a couple weeks, and they do awesome Commander content. We're both at collected.company, which is our website, and it's like it's dot company, so like .com, but with a P-A-N-Y. So collective.company.
Last but not least, you guys can get additional content from Alex and I if you go and download Anchor.fm, which is the app that I use to do a show called 10 Minutes of Magic every week. I kind of am feeling like because Modern is so where my mind is at, I almost want to start moving that show more and more in the Modern direction and almost make it like the unofficial second outlet for Masters of Modern.
A little mini cast?
Kind of. I mean, obviously sure. It's my show that I'm on a lot more than you. So, but I could get you on more because of the cell phone feature. And mm-hmm. guys, so if you go to the Facebook group or Twitter, you'll hear Alex and I went on like a 10-minute conversation last night about two drop creatures that draw cards in Modern, specifically Baleful Strix and why I think it should be in Modern. And we talk about, you know, ideas for cards that could exist that are close to the power level we want. So go check that out. I think that link is live for another.
Just play Elvish Visionary.
It's not as good.
So make sure to check all this content out. Really important. But let's get into the episode. Let's talk about the Pro Tour. I think that's the easiest, quickest piece. Paulo won.
Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa.
How many Pro Tours has he
two.
Won?
He has two. Won two.
This is his second one. So but that's crazy.
Yeah. So this is what I would say about Paulo. For the longest time, John and Kai were always considered like the two greatest. And there was always a conversation there because Kai literally won every Pro Tour one year. So he has like five Pro Tour wins.
Right. He like had one of the greatest runs in Magic history. And
it was in the mid to late 90s. So it was a different time for Magic. But it doesn't change the fact that's like you can't discredit the greats in any sport or anything where people do great things in their time.
Right.
John, I think, only won two or three Pro Tours, but also he top eighted like 11 Pro Tour top eights.
And still is top eighting today.
Yeah.
And he lazily goes to Pro Tours. So because he's considered one of, if not the best player,
yeah.
And Kai Budde is the other person in kind of contention classically, he just like doesn't try hard. He like tests with the best team in the country. And he tries for those 2 weeks before the Pro Tour, but like he doesn't play Magic otherwise. He just shows up and just... Sometimes he spikes a Pro Tour.
Yeah. So what's really interesting about this is like, this is one of those situations where Magic starts to parallel all of the major sports, whether you're talking American or you're talking like football, like not American football.
That's called soccer.
Soccer. Well, they call it football over there.
Yeah, but this is the most America moment I have, but we're in America.
But what I was going to say was, every one of the sort of like legacies of these competitors in their fields, specifically John and Kai and Paulo, it's all determined by the same thing. It's number of rings. How many times have you won the title? Because you can have all the records and you can have all the appearances you want, but at the end of the day, if somebody's got five and you've got one, but you have every record, no one cares. They have five. That's what it all. It all comes down to that.
Well, it's for layman marketing purposes.
Right.
If I don't know anything about a sport, I could argue to death that Michael Jordan is the best basketball player because he has the most rings. I can argue to death that the LA Lakers is the best basketball franchise of all time, or the Steelers are the best football franchise of all time because both of them have won the most championships.
Right, if you chose to.
So I've argued that a few times, mostly because I'll argue with a fish
I will I will allow you to argue action movies with me. I will not allow you to argue sports. that's not acceptable.
I mean, the statements I made are true. Continue.
So long story short, though, Paulo has for a little while now, he's been that guy. We'll say he's the equivalent of LeBron James in the sense that like no one wanted to give LeBron the credit until like now, where people are finally like, he might just be the best ever. He's at least in the top three ever.
Right.
And that's where Paulo's at now, is people are like, he might just be the best ever. And he's at least third, without a doubt. I mean, if you look at he has two wins, but I think he has 12 Pro Tour top eights, and I think he has 18 or 19 Grand Prix top eights, not to mention some Grand Prix wins, I think. So, and this is all in the last, like, 6 years, 7 years. Like, Paulo... I remember when Paulo, like...
Yeah, LSV's in this conversation, but LSV also people just want to commentate for now on.
Yeah, LSV definitely took his... He took his commitment to Magic in a slightly different direction. He became much more of...
A content creator?
Yeah, he sort of went like the Chapin route, where like they're both very good players and they both commit like heavily, but when they're not playing, it's like their job is very much to be a part of the Magic community, and that's as important clearly to them as winning is, it seems like anyway. They
right.
seem to be pretty content being a part of the community. So it definitely seems like, PV is one of the guys who has really stuck with the dream. You know, he's kept that dream alive. Because most guys, 6-7 years, that's a long time. There's not a lot of Magic players. The guys
yeah,
that come
on here, number this list on the Gazette Review, which I have no idea what this is from, but... Paulo was four after, and then
I'm assuming Nassif.
Shuhei Nakamura is the.
They put Shuhei at three?
Two. Kai Budde's at three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know how they ranked it? By winnings, by monetary winnings.
Oh, monetary winnings.
So John Finkel's won 400 at this point, which I'll find the date. 1 second.
I'm sure that's an old list.
October 21st, 2016.
Oh.
So.
What about
John Finkel has won $409,000. Shuhei Nakamura has won $386,000. Kai Budde won $381,000. Paulo had won $352,000. Paulo might be close to number one if you're using this ranking system, which isn't a bad.
I think money. I just when you think about those totals, I think like top eighting a pro tour and getting sixth or eighth or something like that is more impressive than the extra
you pretty much the significant amount of money you win is in that top bracket. Like, I don't think you can get to these numbers if you've just been grinding and hitting 16th place at every pro tour for the last 20 years. Like, you have to win some of these high end sides. And on top of that, it also weights correctly in how difficult Magic is.
Right.
So like even if the prize payout now is higher, the professional competition right now is a higher competitive field. So by using monetary value, that kind of like correlatively scales well with your winnings.
Did you just use the words correlatively?
Yeah.
Is that a word?
No. No way. Not a chance.
Sick.
Being added with sure's is in the Alex Kessel lexicon. But just, you know, money will go up the more competitive it becomes. Right. So the fact that you maybe are like weighted towards more recent means also you've won more in a harder field. I like that ranking system.
I think it's fine. I don't think that it properly reflects the exact numbers, but I think it gives you a pretty strong ballpark.
I think I would take that into account more than I would take total wins first and then maybe that next.
It's fair. So that is the big news from over the weekend, is that Paulo Vitor.
Well, the other thing is this was a pro tour with five mono red deck wins decks.
Yep.
Run 'em up. I'm not going to say that. I'm never going to say that land's name correctly. Rum-a-nap. It's the red desert that you can sack a desert to do 2 damage to each opponent.
Let me take a look.
It's like what the deck is called. So Rum-a-nap red. It had 5 decks in the top 8, and then there was a mono black zombies list, a green black constrictor list, and then one other deck. And this is like, people are complaining like, oh, look, this is what I want Magic to be. I think my happiest versions of standard formats are when mono red wins the Pro Tour, but then, and it like dominates the Pro Tour, but then becomes a tier 2 deck immediately afterwards.
Right.
Like that's the, like when you look at some of the greatest standard formats ever, that's kind of where they came from. And that's just because that's what mono red does. That's what its job is. That's why mono red is the most successful Pro Tour deck of all time. Because it's very good in a field that no one knows what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's what do you do when you don't know what's up? You play aggressive. That's what people do.
And it's like, it means the format is complicated enough that the pros couldn't figure it out, so they went with, oh, I'm just going to punish my opponents.
Right, and that's I think it's...
So the moral story maybe is always play really good life gain in your sideboard at a Pro Tour.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I've never been somebody who's ever played mono red at an event before. I've never done it.
Sure.
It's just never been something on my radar.
You don't believe in that fire.
No, but I get it.
But you do feel the burn.
But I do understand it. That's, look at you, correlatively. So, yes. Anyway, that's the Pro Tour news. Is Paulo on the Pro Tour?
Yeah.
Mono red sweet.
Yeah. Standard might be a good place. All right. So next on our list is Ben giving us
A little breakdown
of Superiority Coco.
Should we talk Fauna Shaman first, or should we talk about the tournament report first?
I think we should talk about PPTQs.
Okay.
And how you feel now that you've played in multiple in 1 week.
Yeah.
How you feel that system is working.
Well, okay. So
because I have one big complaint with them.
Yeah.
And that is totally that their name is dumb. But you go with actually playing in them.
Well, this is what I'll say. So 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, probably I guess it was the first summer we were doing the show, I did something similar. In a span of a few weeks, I think I played in like 4 PPTQs. And I played with Superior Burning Coco, but the earliest iteration of that deck. And I had fun. It was before they had canceled the Modern Pro Tour and those events that I assumed would be around 30 people. Because the payout of winning one of these is you get fed to a larger tournament that you then have a chance to play against the best of the best to then top 4 and then get to a Pro Tour. It's a really hard road. We've talked about this a lot, but it's a very difficult road. And winning a PPTQ is exciting, but it's hard to do, and it's not worth that much. It just isn't. Like, you don't get that much out of it. So in my mind, these have always been sort of a bit more like GPTs. And your local GPT, usually a Grand Prix trial, would be like 22 to 35 people. And sometimes smaller. But rarely was a GPT anywhere near 40 people. Because, again, the payout's not that big. Why would that many people show up? There should be a lot of them. So a couple years ago, the exact same thing happened that happened this weekend, which is that I show up to these things expecting there to be about 25 to 35 people, and it pushes damn near 70. So
well, that's because these aren't
GPTs?
GPTs. These are
PPTQs.
PPTQs, and those are 76-player tournaments.
Yeah, but the problem with that is the old PTQs would be like 128 or 110 sometimes. Occasionally, they'd be like a 200-person tournament, but very often
they were getting to average. When they made the change, they were getting between 150 to 250 players was the average.
Yeah, and both were incredibly difficult, but I guess the feeling there was like we're playing in a mini GP level of competition here, and winning it is worth something enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tough thing is 70 players that are grinders is a lot. So on Thursday night, I went to the local Modern Night at our local shop just to like get a few reps, and I got to play against three different decks, which was great. That was like sort of just like whetting my appetite. The three decks that I played against were Ad Nauseam, Green Black X, the Ghost Quarter, three main deck Ooze one, and Storm, Gift Storm.
Mm-hmm.
I went 1-2. I hadn't really refined my sideboard yet, and I hadn't made the major changes that I made going into the weekend.
We'll talk about.
Yep. Ad Nauseam, interesting. Like, I hadn't played against an Ad Nauseam deck in quite some time. I'd seen coverage of them and talked about them, but like, even remembering how it all worked and like what you're supposed to respond to, I'll say Angel's Grace is a pretty sweet card.
Yeah.
Like for stalling purposes, he like almost just won the game. He won a game by playing Angel's Grace, pass, Angel's Grace, pass, Angel's Grace, win, when right. I, like, had him dead on board. And, like, that's annoying. It's really hard. It's fog. But
the I have a Gideon of the Trials Glorious End deck in my phone that, like, I keep goldfishing, and it plays four of it, and it's just like, oh, yeah, this card's good. And Gideon of the Trial does similar things.
Yeah, Gideon of the Trials, sweet. So Green Black X is a really good deck. I think that deck is super powerful and does exactly what it's supposed to do, which is, and it's interesting too. There's a blue white deck and a green black deck that have popped up now that do kind of the same thing, which is that they're able to play really efficient and consistent mana bases that allow to play like three or four Ghost Quarters in the main deck.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the value because of like Eldrazi Tron and various other things. They play like 27, 28 land. So they're always going to hit their land drops. They're not really worried about it. But they play enough Ghost Quarters in the main deck, they can just fire them off,
mm-hmm.
And they can slow you down. So the Green-Black X deck, I beat, actually. I beat the Ad Nauseam player. That's what it was. And then the Green-Black X player I lost against. The Green-Black X guy, a couple things happened. One, it turns out Graveyard Hate's pretty good against Superior Burning Cocoa. Like, it's pretty good. A lot of your value comes from recursion out of your graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And like your late game is like getting your Renegade Rallier or like your Claim to Fame or something. It used to be Profane Command, and having like a big Haymaker turn where you get back a Superior or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus your Goyfs. They can really, really hurt your game plan if they take out your graveyard. So Green Black X is just better than you. They have lots of oozes in the main deck to eat your graveyard. And their Goyfs are as big as your Goyfs, but you don't get any late game. And obviously, like they play more efficient cards because they're not like doing something tricky and wonky. Their mana base is super consistent. They're not slow. So, yeah, it's a good deck. And then Gift Storm was the first time I had played against this new version of Gift Storm because it's a newer deck. And it's super good. It's really streamlined. That I will say. It does not interact with you almost at all. Remand is, I think, the only interactive card in the entire deck. It's not playing any bolts.
Right. The only interaction that Storm generally wants to have are things that stop your interaction.
Yes. And remands are really barely in there for that reason anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, that deck is non-interactive, and you just have to have a game plan post-board. I mean, like, as we both know, that's how Modern is. Half the decks in the format, that's the deal. If you have a nuke in the sideboard, you're great. And if you don't, you don't. And the nice
thing about Storm is weak to Graveyard Hate.
Yep.
So that's like... And I think if it wasn't, Wizards would be taking a little bit more of a banhammer against it and or Dredge, because the fact that two of the big interactive decks are all... And I think that's one of the reasons Affinity is doing so well, is that like the main format's big bads are weak to Graveyard Hate.
Yep.
Where Affinity used to have like share with Infect as this like really quickly aggro all-on-one flyer game plan. So like made Lingering Souls really good in the format or decks that could handle that specific game plan. So it was weaker then, but now that Infect is gone, now the only hate against Affinity is its weakness to artifact hate.
Right.
And you can only have so many slots between graveyard and artifact hate, and the fact that you can have so many decks that graveyard hate is important to, you just prioritize that.
Yep, absolutely. So that was like my warm-up was that tournament. I didn't really get a super strong sense of the format there because I don't think Ad Nauseam is a premier deck right now. Green-Black is definitely a thing, and Storm is, I mean, Storm's kind of tier one right now. People are playing a lot of it. But then I went to the next tournament. I made a few changes, nothing drastic to the main deck. I decided to play one Collective Brutality, I think, in the main deck. Or maybe I hadn't even decided to do that. I think that was still in
the sideboard. That was day two. Yeah, or day three.
But I pretty much took the same list and changed my sideboard around.
Okay.
And the matchups day one, I played six rounds, were Affinity, Nahiri, like Jeskai Control, Grixis Shadow, Domain Shadow, Eldrazi Tron, and another Affinity deck. I ended up going 3-3.
Okay.
It was kind of a disappointing day. I would describe the matchups. So Affinity twice, I'll start there. It was my first matchup and my last matchup. Something I learned playing Affinity that I was reminded of was a few years ago I had three or four Stony Silences in the sideboard, even though I play Vile in my deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to bring them in against Affinity, and what I realized is like, you need a nuke against Affinity. The only other card that you possibly can play against Affinity that gives you a decent shot at winning, I think, is Lingering Souls. But you have to be a deck that can consistently hit Lingering Souls on the third turn, flash it back, have a game plan. It needs to be in your opener. Like, even Lingering Souls feels good, but not...
Lingering Souls is a card that gives you points against Affinity if it's in your main deck. Because you have a card that's really good against them all three games. When it's a sideboard plan against Affinity, it's not like Lingering Souls is a sideboard plan against Infect is good because literally they have to waste pump spells to be able to get through tokens.
Yeah.
Otherwise, their creature dies other than the unblockable one. With Affinity, they just have other options and they can just go do a wide swing where you have to block all of them with all four of your tokens and then the next turn they'll go deep on one guy. So like... Yeah, no, Lingering Souls is more like it gives you points in your main deck, not in your sideboard.
Even Kitaki, which I have one of in my sideboard, which because I play a Fauna Shaman deck, seems like should be a really good card. In day one, I had to mold a 5 against Affinity and kept a 1-lander, Scry. My 1-lander is a fetch land, and I see Kitaki on the top of the deck. It was such a slump. Like, yeah, of course I have to keep this card on top, which means I'm going to take a turn off from drawing a land because I can't crack my fetch on turn one because I have to draw this card. So I can't do anything. I'm going to have to just
That's more just bad beats. I mean, like, would you say Kitaki, if you were getting it in a normal game, would be good against Affinity?
I played Kitaki
deck?
On turn three. It didn't do almost anything.
Sure.
Kitaki's not actually very good against them. It's fine. It slows them down. But they, unless you can sneak a Kitaki
in. It's good against some specific Affinity hand. It's good against their wide strategy.
Yeah. If they do like the like Ornithopter double Memnite Mox Opal, like where they knock down like, you know, 7 artifacts in the first 2 turns and they're stranded with like the 1 Opal in their hand or the 1 plating in their hand or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play it. Like, that's where you can win.
One, I think, like, Kitaki is good in junk decks where you turn to Kitaki, turn three Lingering Souls. Like, then Affinity has a lot of problems because now you're kind of getting them on both ends.
Right.
They can't just save one guy because your Affinity tokens will just block it forever. And they can't go wide because they can't afford it. So then you put them in that. That's where you have to put them on a squeeze. But when you're only doing one or the other, I can see where that's problematic.
I would still keep the one Kitaki in my board because of the Fauna Shaman plan. And I think especially if you're like grinding in game 2 or 3 against Affinity and you look at their board state and you have a Fauna Shaman Vile active and you're barely holding on and you see the opportunity to like end of turn sneak in Kitaki, like you can just win. I feel like you can nuke half their board that way. So that's pretty smart. But in general, I was less impressed. Stony Silence in the end is the card. That's the card you want against Affinity, period, end of story. Ancient Grudge is good. Stony Silence, when you play it against them, in a lot of cases, it just ends the game. They don't.
Right.
They almost can't do anything. Because some people don't realize, but they can't activate their land. They can't use Darksteel Citadel. They can't use Mox Opal, obviously, but they can't tap Darksteel Citadel for mana.
Right.
Like, they're left with, basically, Ink Moth and Blink Moth Nexus. and that's it.
Right. Well, I think one of the reasons that Affinity's been doing so well is that neither Grixis, Death Shadow, Eldrazi Tron, Red-Green Scapeshift, none of these decks can play Stony Silence. Like, the only deck that can play is Blue-White, and I think Blue-White is doing really well recently. Like, we keep getting good data that, like, control is back, and, like, Blue-White is kind of the main forefront of that.
There'll be some exciting stuff to talk about in the day twos here. So, aside from that, day one, I played against the Domain Shadow deck, the Grixis Shadow deck, Nahiri Control with, you know, Emrakul, like, the Jeskai Nahiri Control deck, and finally, Eldrazi Tron. Those are all the decks I played day one.
What was your easiest matchup, and what was your hardest matchup?
I felt like Domain Shadow was pretty easy.
Okay.
It's fast, and it's aggressive, but if you have a couple well-timed removal spells, you can do pretty well against them. And also for me, because my creatures are pretty big, one removal spell and, like, a live Mirror Superior or, like, a live Tarmogoyf or something. Just, like, just getting to the mid game and, like, not dying to them. Collective Brutality is also pretty insane against them because they play Swift Spear. They play Swift Spear and they play a bunch of pump spells. So your ability to kill a Swift Spear and take a pump spell is, like, really epic. And even, honestly, just playing Brutality to just, like, just playing Brutality to take a pump spell and maybe, like, drain gain can be enough to pull you out of that. Because they're kind of more like a zoo deck, honestly. They're a zoo deck that plays Shadow. So that was pretty interesting. They're just a kind of a, like, they're like Blitz, but they're kind of vulnerable. Eldrazi Tron's really good. That deck's just very powerful. The one thing I will say is that your creatures in this deck match up well against theirs. Mirror Superior specifically matches up very well against them because they play Endbringer, they play Reality Smasher, they play Thought Not Seer, but a 5/6 blocks all of those creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It just blocks them. And especially if you have one in hand with a Vial and they attack a Smasher into it, it's like, okay, sweet. Like, I just, like, they don't have that much to get rid of you. They do play main deck Relic, which is annoying. That's, like, a super annoying thing they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, like, Karn is very good. I was able to beat a Karn because I had Collected Company. So she, like, played the Karn, killed Superior, and I, like, companied in 10 power, managed to take out Karn. But
so against Karn, would it be worth playing, what's it called? The Pithing Needle creature.
Revoker. So, but you guys are probably hearing and noticing, and I thought about this a lot, there's quite a few similarities in deck construction and sideboard options between Hate Bears and this deck. Because you're both looking to play a lot of 2 and 3 drops.
And they have to be creatures.
You really want them to be creatures so that you can hit them off of a Collected Company, or you can Vial them in, or you can search for them with Fauna Shaman. And that's definitely the way the deck is constructed.
And Claim the Fame gets them back. Like, you have a lot of different reasons. And so you want them to be 2/2s or 2 drops.
Totally. But what I will say is I've never been impressed with Revoker for a lot of the same reasons that, like, Harsh Mentor sucks, or, like, it's when it's just, like, a fragile 2/1 and, like, your game plan is to, like,
the benefit of Pithing Needle is it is, like, hard indestructible
with.
Where eventually you can just kill a 2/1.
Like, if Stony Silence was a bear, I'm sure I'd play 1, but I certainly wouldn't play 4 over Stony Silence because it's an enchantment. It's harder to interact with.
Sure. Well, but you also would only need 1 because you can tutor for it.
Yes. That's like the big realization there is that Eldrazi Tron is scary. And certainly, yeah, if they get a nut draw, she turned 3 Karn, like a natural turn 3 Karn in the game she won against me. They also can play Chalice against you.
Chalice needs to be at 4. You have
limited
1 drops.
And the sweetest card in their deck is Walking Ballista, for sure.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's, like, super sick.
Love the card.
Oh, my God. The fact that they can turn 3 Walking Ballista for
as
3.
3/3.
And then if they untap, like, you have to kill Walking Ballista.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just, like, game over.
Yeah.
You're just done.
It becomes a...
They just have...
It goes to 5 the next turn if they untap.
Yeah, they just start to have the ability to, like, completely machine gun anything on your side of the board.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's just a very good card. So, But that matchup was tough, but I definitely was not – I was not as scared of it afterwards. The main deck Relics are tough for you. You really don't want to see Relic. That was pretty much my day one. So after day one, I went home. I adjusted. I talked to you a little bit about things that I wanted to see.
Well, and one thing we talked about is you know, you came into that day with not enough Affinity Hate. That's kind of what was the decision at the end of it. And Stony Silence is also good against Eldrazi Tron.
It's not bad. I asked that girl because she was there the next day as well.
Okay.
I asked her about it. And what she said was, if you can get it down early against them, it's on the play, it's good. Because it stops their expedition map, and it stops their relic.
Right. But it also stops
Walking Ballista.
Walking Ballista.
So it's good against them in that sense. Now, if you draw one mid-game, it's probably not so good. They've probably used a map. At that point, the relic's probably a lot less relevant. And they probably have already cast a Walking Ballista or have mana to cast that is like a 6-6. And that point, it's just a 6-6, and they don't really care about your Stony.
But that's also true against Affinity. If you play Stony Silence on turn 4, it kind of doesn't matter as much anymore.
Yeah, agreed. But like, it definitely turns off a lot of what they're doing anyway.
Sure, that's
true. It turns off a lot of their
game. It still locks them down, and it makes it so if you can then do anything to them, they can't rebound.
Okay.
Like Ravager becomes worthless.
Yeah.
Like it makes a lot of their...
But they get Ravager in response. But yeah, their top decks become much worse.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was definitely a thing where I was like, all right, I need to adjust. I need to go. So I went and I made sure I had the full set of Stonies. Played 3. Went up to 3 Leyland of the Void. I'd been playing 2 the previous day. In retrospect, I want 4 of each. That's what the deck's going to... I'm going to try to play in at least one more event this summer, probably 2 more.
Okay.
And I am going to probably... Unless it's like a month from now and the meta's totally shifted, I'm going to show up with 4 Leyline and 4 Stony.
Okay.
Because, like, they're both good, and, like, Leyline of the Void is good against a lot of things.
And the other thing you added was a Fauna Shaman, because we had a long conversation about it. It sounds like the game plan of 4-4 and then the remaining 7 slots in your sideboard being singleton targets for Fauna Shaman, if you go up on them, isn't the worst plan for you.
Yeah, you know, I had Mirren Crusaders in the board. I don't think they're as important as they once were because they're good against green-black and they're good against Grixis, but Grixis can kill them. They just bolt them.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine.
But it was better when Jund was the main version of Death Shadow that was kind of doing well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of versions that are now dipping into other colors, so it doesn't feel as necessary anymore. Probably one or maybe even none.
Yep.
So, but yeah, the 4-4, we swapped out, we went down to 2 Confidant and up the 3 Fauna Shaman was one of the big changes. Played a main deck Collective Brutality. I cut the Selfless Spirit and replaced it with an Apocrysite because I wanted one more 4-power creature to hit off.
I would love the internet's thoughts on Apocrysite.
Look, I've tested with Apocrysite in the past and it's a weak card. It's not good. You never want to cast that on turn 2 ever. But because the deck is playing some number of Fauna Shamans and Claim Fames and Ralliers and all these things, you want Ronas to be a 5-5 when you hit him. You wanted one more creature in the deck to be a 4-4 off of a Coco or off of a Vial. And because of Goyf, Apocrysite's a pretty ideal creature to discard. It's a pretty good one. It makes your Goyf one bigger. I didn't feel bad. In the one game that I had it in my opener, I vialed it in as a 4-4, and it was good. So
the wording is if you just don't cast mana.
If you don't cast it from your hand.
Okay.
So if you vial it, it's a 4-4.
It counts. Okay.
Yeah. But the third Fauna Shaman is really interesting because what you realize is your A plan in the deck is to play Burning Tree Emissary on turn 2 and get down Mirror Superior off of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you have a Superior or a Burning Tree in your opener, but you don't have the other piece, it can be frustrating. Enter 3 Fauna Shaman, which means, okay, I'm going to play Fauna Shaman on turn 2, which means you have to now interact with my Fauna Shaman, like kill it immediately, or on turn 3, I'm going to discard whatever creature I don't need and turn it into the other half of this combo and put 7 power on the table.
Or just get the specific bullet you need for this matchup. I mean, like,
yes.
The beyond your main game plan, if that works out, goes well. But if, say, you are like don't have both pieces, you can discard a Burning Tree Emissary that's not going to do anything and get a Scavenging Ooze that's going to wreck the Tarmogoyf deck, or you know, you can kind of pick and choose the best way to going about it.
Yeah. Something else that I think is like super interesting is that you want like more ways to go like Burning Tree into something on turn 2 in some matchups. Mm-hmm. There's some matchups where you just want to put power on the battlefield. You
sure.
Just want to put down like 4 power on turn 2. And so just Burning Tree into Fauna Shaman is not a good play, but if you know what's in your hand and you like have a feeling you're going to be able to recover.
Well, one thing we realize is your deck actually has a problem in the sense that a lot of the cards aren't really that castable. And
yeah.
That's the problem with Bob is it's not castable off of a Burning Tree.
Yeah.
But Fauna Shaman is, and it because of Claim to Fame and because of Renegade Rallier, your deck has more interests than it used to have cards in your graveyard.
Yeah, so I'm now going to kind of go through a little bit of what happened in day 2, and then
yep.
We can talk a little bit more about kind of where the deck stands and what makes Fauna Shaman so sweet.
Yep.
So day 2, I showed up with 3 Stonies. I played Affinity in round 1. I lost game 1. I won games 2 and 3. Game 2 was ended off of playing a Stony. He played one turn with the Stony and playing, then he just scooped. Game 3, I managed to like long game him, having a Mirror Superior in play to block his Etch Champion, which is like very important. He was ticking it up with a Steel Overseer, and in the end, I drew Lingering Souls and was able to search up Aronis, make one of the guys on my team trample, and push through for the final win. Okay. So it was close, but it felt good to beat Affinity to start the day. Second, I played Blue White Red, and this is like the Logic Knot version. So it's like the committed.
It's the Nahiri.
No, this is not the Nahiri.
Oh no.
If he had Nahiri.
Oh, so this is just like Snapcaster Mages.
Yes.
The bunch of mill cards.
They play Spire Bluff Canal. It's like the really efficient. It's that one that popped up like a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Sure.
And that was close. I beat him in 3 games.
It's almost more burn Delver without Delvers than it is necessarily a control deck.
It's like a Delverless Delver. The games were really close, and it ended up coming down to, you know, in game 1, I just needed a Collective Brutality to finish him off. He was at 2. Didn't draw it, and then I beat him in games 2 and 3, and it was close, but, you know, I was able to get there. Collected Company is good. After that, I played against Eternal Command, which was sick.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was playing his own version of Eternal Command. It made me really happy because I love that deck. And it was like he had, like, Familiar's Ruse, and he was playing Spellstutter Sprites.
Nice.
And, yeah, it was sick. I was really into it. The games were close. He took me down one of them. It was a 3-game deal. Beat him. He was a cool player. He made one mistake where he – 2 different times people looked at my hand and forgot to take – or 2 different times, one guy forgot to take Superion out of my hand with an active vial because he didn't realize I could vial it in. And the other time, he bounced a Superion to my hand with a Cryptic Command and then attacked into it, forgetting that I could vial it back in. It's one of the sweetest things about playing a brew is that people don't realize it.
Yeah, there's so many weird lines in this deck that aren't normal ways people will interact with magic and that's why you play brews.
Yeah.
I mean, like the best brews are ones that take advantage of a rule that people or an interaction people aren't expecting. And so they're going to thoughtseize badly.
Yeah, and I will say the best card in this whole deck, through and through, no question, is Aether Vial.
Yeah.
It's like the games that you have a vial in your opener, I've started to learn, even if you have like I've kept the Mold of Six 4 land vial Collected Company hands.
Like the more your deck is convincing me that regardless of the Mirror Superior half, which I think is really strong and I'm not but there's just a good engine in Modern right now between Aether Vial, Collected Company, Fauna Shaman, and
Renegade Rallyer. Yeah.
And your deck might be the best version of that, and I'm not saying it's not, but those 4 cards together interact, and Claim to Fame,
Yeah.
Those 5 cards interact in a way, and that's, you know, that's a 5-color deck with Claim to Fame. But I think Renegade Rallyer and Claim to Fame could be interchangeable. Right. In a way that is very fascinating, and being able to have the instant speed Fauna Shaman Aether Vial plan seems backbreaking. Having the ability to then Claim to Fame things or Renegade Rally or those things back into play seems very strong. The fact that Collected Company does a soft version of that, like an unintentional version of those same effects, also seems really good.
It's quite possible that actually there's a version of this deck that this could evolve into that's much less beef heavy and much like
a Hate Bears-y
strategy. And a little more control. Like you're trying to set up, which I think just turns it into a combo deck because that's like what people play.
Like kind of doing what Birthing Pod was doing. Like doing a Malira combo. Because right now I believe Counter Company, the infinite mana half of it can just be 2 drops. So you know, like you can maybe play because you don't need Kitchen Finks in that version. You maybe have the ability to play a combo-y version of this deck that takes advantage of all these pieces.
Yeah, I'm curious if there is a creature combo that could exist to board into.
I think. You need something to do with that infinite mana, but Vizier of Remedies and Mana Dude.
Yeah, and Devoted Druid.
Devoted Druid.
And Devoted Druid is good with Superior anyway. Yeah, like superior.
Like having, I think that's a combo that I would heavily consider adding to your deck.
It's a thought. I mean, you have to have enough sinks, and then it's not valuable to get infinite mana if you have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and there's Rhonas. You have Rhonas, which is a great sink to have infinite mana with.
It's true.
And you have, and I think you would add something along the lines of a Kessig Wolf Run or the guy who draws a bunch.
Yeah, you'd play the 2-mana werewolf.
And you can play maybe a 1 of Walking Ballista just to have that combo in your deck available. I know it doesn't work with Collected Company, but...
It also doesn't... That's a bad card in the deck. But you'd play something.
Sure.
You'd play something. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
well, I don't know if that's true, because casting it for 1 off of a Burning Tree Emissary is fine.
Yeah, it's okay. But in any case, so yeah, I'm with you, though. I think there's definitely an interesting thing there. So after Eternal Command, the rest of the decks that I played... I beat a blue-white deck, straight-up blue-white, like committed blue-white control, and it was close, but I think I 2-0'd him. And then I was 4-0, which was sick. I was, like, so happy and so excited about the day. I was like, oh, Coco's getting there for me. And then I fell off a cliff, and I lost 3 matches in a row, and 2 of them because I had 4-0'd, and the guys that I lost games to, the guy that I lost in the 5th round to just ID'd the last 2 rounds, so he was in the top 8. So my breakers were exceptionally high, even after losing. So the round 5 match that I lost to Blue White, this is the deck of the weekend as far as I'm concerned. This guy was playing Blue White, Spellqueller, Squadron Hawk, Fleecemane Lion, Dusk Till Dawn, Reflector Mage. Like, he was playing like the sweetest Blue White deck. Like, he had down, like, Reflector Mage and Spellqueller, and he, like, Dusk Till Dawn and, like, wrecked all my Superiorians and, like, Goyfs and didn't kill any of his creatures.
Dusk Till Dawn in Modern is sick.
And, like, if you have the right creature suite to accommodate it, like, I was just very impressed. The deck was
awesome. I realize I'm, like, very hipster about cards I want to see playing in Magic. The less it's seen play in Modern, the more I'm happy that it's seen play in Modern.
Yeah. So, yeah, that deck is sweet. The last 2 losses for me were Scape Shift, Titan Shift, and 4-color Death Shadow. The Titan Shift deck, I made a mistake. I let him get Valakut off of, like, that 5-mana green spell that searches up 2 lands.
Okay.
And I had Mind Sensor with an active vial that I had searched for, and I was thinking for some reason in my mind that I had to save it for the Scape Shift, not really thinking about the fact that, like, if I gave him 2 Valakuts, the game was just over.
Mm-hmm.
And he was confused, and I was just a player. I just was dumb. I was thinking Scape Shift was how the deck won, and not that I just needed to prevent him from getting the spell off and have a chance to draw something. I would have lost anyway, but that was a crappy one.
Right.
And then 4-color Shadow was like all of the good things you've seen out of Grixis Shadow, but add white for Lingering Souls and Path to Exile. And it was playing, and it was playing Lavamancer.
Sure.
And like, it was just good, and it had all the answers, and its mana base was super fragile, and if I had had some way to mess up his mana, like, I would have been stoked, but he was playing basics. I feel like he was bad, and it was a bad deck. Like, he was a good player, and he was a nice guy, but, like, building that deck is so aggressive. To have that many colors and that many non-basics and be playing Shadow and actually have basic lands in your deck when you get Path just seems crazy to me. That doesn't seem like it's possible. It seems like if you get Ghost Quartered a lot, you just lose. Then again, it's such a high-velocity deck. Like, I asked him, I was like, what happens if somebody Blood Moons you? He was like, well, very often I just, like, have enough on the battlefield already that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, by turn 3, you're just good.
Yeah, he's like, I strip their hand, or I have a live Lavamancer, or I've played a Shadow or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so maybe I'm bad. And he was, but it was annoying to lose basically 2 win-and-ins, my 5th and 7th round.
Sure.
It was very deflating, and that was the weekend. So there you have it.
A little bitter.
Yes, I was annoyed. I was like, this is going to be exciting, the top 8 of 70-person tournament with this, like, sweet brew that I've been working on for so long, and it didn't happen.
But
I'm going to give it at least 1 more go this summer.
Yeah. I think you're getting there. I think, like, you know, this is the power of testing. I think, you know, if Modo was a better platform,
yeah,
you would be jamming it a little bit more and using that as a testing method, because it's a little bit easier to do it there. But because it has its challenges, it's a little bit more difficult to really kind of bite into right now, because I wouldn't invest real money into Modo at this point, hoping that they'll change it. And maybe I'm just wrong and they never will, and we should just all jump on ship. But with that in mind, what would you say the strongest strengths of the deck are, and what are its greatest weaknesses?
I would say the strongest strengths of the deck are that it has crazy, crazy catch up with things you can do with Collected Company, in a way that I think almost no deck in the format has the raw power you can get.
Wait, Collected Company and other decks can just, like, combo out, I guess, is, like, the only alternative version, but you just get so much beef onto the table that it's basically a combo.
Yeah, I mean, you have a couple different reasons that's the case. A, Superion's a 5-6. You have an effective 5th through 8th Tarmogoyf, which, like, every deck would play if they could get
you're
away basi- with.
Like, you're playing a more difficult... You're jumping through similar hoops to Gurmag Angler, and your Gurmag Angler has one more toughness.
Yes, and you can get your Gurmag Angler on turn 2, which they can also do through your own method.
Right.
But you can also get it.
And I would say your method is in the law. Well, no. Okay, it's comparable. Yeah.
So, but it's a 5-6, which is what makes it so much better.
Right.
So much better than so many things because it's a 5-6.
Right.
So that's very good.
I mean, yeah, like the amount of times I've gone in Tarmogoyf to 6-7 or higher is like small.
Yeah.
And like it, but it's been good enough that like I've like regularly played with what's the
Bitter
card?
Blossom.
Bitter Blossom in the deck. Because that puts enchantment and tribal into my graveyard. Sick. And like yeah, no, that's why Liliana is so good in the deck. You want planeswalkers.
Like a good example of like the kind of turn that's so epic in this deck is like okay, so you Collected Company main phase because you have a stranded Superion in your hand. And maybe you have gotten a Superion or a Goyf or something that you've played on turn 2 that got pushed. So this is like a thing that happens. You'll go, okay, instead of end of turn company, I'm going to main phase company. I'm going to hit Burning Tree Emissary and I'm going to hit Renegade Rallier. And it's going to grab a Superion out of my graveyard, and I'm going to use the 2 mana off this Burning Tree Emissary to cast the Superion in my hand. So now you've gotten 5 out of your
graveyard.
You went
from, like, totally boned to...
5 in your hand and 5
10,
from your deck.
11, 12,
puts
13.
15 power.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a thing you can do...
16 power.
3, 5... No,
15, 10,
15. 15. And, like, that's, like, a thing you can do. And, like, that's not a crazy thing either. It's, like, some combination of wild, weird things you're able to do in the deck that, like, you can just vomit 15 power onto the graveyard for 4 mana.
Sure.
And your opponent, like, looks at you and they're like, my game plan to win or survive is, like, greatly hindered now. And you're just like, yeah, I'm going to win now because, like, you can't answer all of these huge things.
I, like, keep bouncing back with your deck on how, like, white versus red.
Right.
White's
just, the sideboard is just so valuable.
Right. Well, and that's with Stony Silence, but if you went red, you could do like the 4 Ancient Grudge plan.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's a spell. You want it at all costs.
But Stony Silence is a...
True. That's true.
You want creatures. Like either one is not a creature. So like that to me, and you can play Shatter Spree. Like there are nukes against Affinity in red that are as good as Stony Silence if you really want to go for it. And you have a way to kind of ramp a little bit to get to play those. So that's not really what I think you'd be worrying about. But by red, you have consistency with your Claim to Fames. And you have... There's one other reason I wanted you to go to full red that I'm forgetting now.
Some other Sweet Hate Bear or something? Harsh Mentor?
No, not Harsh Mentor is bad. But yeah, Castle Wolf Run. Or being able to play ways to give your... And that's kind of what you're doing with Rhonas, but one of the problems your deck currently has is just going over people. Because the situation you described, but if I have 3 just blockers, I could get past that.
Yeah, it's true.
But maybe it's just you just... 2 5-6s, a 2-2, and a 3-2 are like just good enough to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely directions to take this deck in every color that are interesting. Blue presents some really interesting ones, too. Obviously, more Claim Fame, as you just said, in red. I think there's lots of arguments.
So, how was Claim Fame?
Claim Fame was sick. It was... I only played the one. I don't know... you know, it was like Claim Fame was very, very powerful. I only played one. I like definitely won a game off of the whole claim a Burning Tree Emissary into play, use the red mana to fame that Burning Tree Emissary and attack as a 4-2 haste.
Okay.
That was totally like out of the blue. It's like out of the blue burn stuff that like people don't see coming.
Sure.
And I think it's really, we talked about it on the show and it worked. The issue with this, and I present this as a riddle to the listeners of this show.
Yep. Discuss it on our Facebook group.
Yeah. So the way this deck works is I've tested all different, you know, moving the numbers around, but what it comes down to is you basically have to play 22 land because you need to be able to hit Collected Company. You don't want to stall out. 21 I've done, and it feels worse. 20 feels correct with two Horizon Canopies, so you can sack them later. You need four Collected Company and four Vile to be able to reliably play the creature suite that you're playing, which then means if you're going to play a number of creatures high enough to hit consistently off Company, which is probably around 25, which is what I play, you only have slots for a few other spells. And in Modern, you have to be playing some amount of interaction, which means, in this case, three Path to Exile, I was playing a Decay, I replaced it with a Collective Brutality, and finally, one Claim to Fame, which used to be one Profane Command. If you, as listeners of the show, think that it's smart to somehow cut down to 21 land, trim your Collected Companies, trim your creature suite. If you think that playing 22 or 23 creatures is enough with Company, you can get a lot more clever with more Claim to Fames, more Brutalities, more interesting things. How to properly negotiate that to be the most interactive, most raw power, I'm still trying to figure out too. But as it stands now, sometimes your companies suck because you just whiff or you don't hit good stuff. And you definitely want to make sure your creature suite's high enough to make Company a valuable card. The deck's very, it feels often like whenever you
How many times did you miss with Company?
Like one out of every five, you have like a zero or like a one.
Okay.
But like usually it's, I would say four out of five. It's like very good.
Okay.
So anyway, that's the thoughts on the deck, guys. I think we talked about Fauna Shaman a pretty good amount in there. So you guys.
Break it down. Make sure to go to our Facebook to discuss this question in the deck. Ben will put a post with the list that he currently is playing with on our Facebook group. So you can kind of go and discuss stuff there and discuss maybe changes or tweaks you think it could go through.
Yep.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter. I am at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
We are at the MM Cast. Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone and Collected.Company. Thanks to Hagen Kirk for giving us all the sweet data he gives us every week. We really appreciate it. And it lets us kind of talk like we know what we're talking about. Make sure to check out our Patreon. It's really important. It's why we're able to afford the equipment we keep replacing, because it keeps breaking down, and why we're able to do the podcast every week. And make sure to check out the Facebook group again, because it's sweet. I think that's the main shout out. Oh, and Anchor, make sure to check out Timmons Magic. I will guest on it regularly now, or more regularly than I was before. Plus, Ben does awesome content on there. You can battle him and other good things. And
Thanks
so much, guys.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.